Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Jane Jordan Meyer is a former journalist with more than 25 years' experience in the media and communication management. She's a licensed and accredited media trainer and coach and has a master's degree in communication management. She's the author of the book, The Four Stages of Highly Effective Crisis Management: How to Manage the Media in the Digital Age. Jane, welcome to Edgewise.
Thank you very much, Dave.
To begin with, what are the four stages?
First of all, there's some triggering event when the spotlight is on the incident. That might be an oil spill, death of your iconic CEO, a major fire that wipes out your factory. Mm-hmm. And the question is, what happened? And it's all about getting the basic facts about the incident. And very quickly, thanks to Twitter and YouTube and Facebook, but particularly Twitter, we jump into stage two.
And what happens there?
In stage two, the spotlight moves from the incident, typically to the victims in the unfolding drama. Now we have the basic facts. We know what date it was. We may know that some people have been injured, or we know that there's been an explosion. Mm-hmm. So what's happening to the family? What's happening to the environment? But also the spotlight very squarely is on the company, the organization, and its response to that event. So the questions now being asked are, how did this happen? How could this possibly happen? And you can make it or break it in stage two.
Ooh.
If you've mishandled stage two, or if it's a big disaster like the BP oil spill, we would move to stage three, which is the blame stage. Now, everybody wants to be able to point a finger and say, why did this happen?
Right.
The spotlight is now a floodlight. It is everywhere. Everybody has an opinion. Twitter may have gone into overload. Facebook pages are abounding with information. YouTube viral videos are everywhere. Talkback radio, letters to the editor, you name it. Comedy, jokes, everything is happening in stage three.
So that's a tough one.
Yes. Professors come up and say, 10 years ago, I told them that there'd be an explosion if they didn't fix this pipeline, or something to that effect. So everybody has an opinion. Congress usually has a say. The president may even be involved. Very nasty, dirty stage, and one to be avoided at all costs, if at all possible.
Yep.
And then stage four, the crisis ends. There's some event that marks the closure of that crisis. People go back to work. There's a funeral. There's an inquiry. The product goes back on the shelf.
Exactly.
But if there's another incident in that industry, like another oil explosion, immediately we compare and contrast to what happened before. So there's always fallout issues from a crisis.
Now, are these four stages true in every situation? Does it differ when it's traditional communications versus social media?
There is a lot of evidence and a lot of very substantial science that show that the patterns of reporting and patterns of human behavior are predictable. Not only reporting in the traditional media, CNN or the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, or indeed in journals, but in social media, because the fundamental point to be made here is that human beings are essentially storytellers.
Right.
We like to tell our stories. We will stretch or shrink or squeeze the facts to suit our perception of a situation. So it doesn't matter if something's broken in social media or traditional media, the patterns are the same.
Okay, that's an interesting point, but it seems to me that social media can be louder.
With social media, it is one to many. There is a large conversation and everyone has an opinion. Citizen journalists abound. Anybody who has a smartphone can be a reporter. Anybody with a video camera can point and shoot and be an instant reporter today.
Hmm.
We blog, we tweet, we have our Facebook pages, we put our videos up on YouTube. So the noise is louder and it extends very fast around the world. There is a pattern of hyper-global and hyperlocal information.
Okay, now what's the difference and why is it important?
Let's take an example of, say, a product recall. It will be very localized. How does this affect my child that's just eaten this supposedly contaminated peanut butter? But in the rest of the world, the global picture,
right,
people might be saying, does our peanut butter contain the same peanuts that were found in Atlanta, Georgia? So there's a very global impact always to a crisis. And I think a lot of organizations forget that.
Hmm.
They think they can isolate it and keep it inside an organization or inside their little community. Not today. thanks to the power of digital democracy, there are no boundaries anymore. And the word spread around the world. So the noise is huge.
So it's more important than ever before to know how to manage a crisis situation affecting your organization.
Absolutely critical. The rules of crisis management, act fast, take responsibility, has never been more important. You can never prevent a crisis in an organization. Right. Even the best companies have a crisis, but it's about planning for them and how you manage them. Certainly, crisis management plans will fail if you haven't got a social media element to them. You have to understand the power of the people.
Absolutely.
We are living in the age of digital democracy. People have information. They own the information. They want to be able to make it make sense for themselves. And they spread the news however they want, wherever they want, whenever they want.
What are the warning signs of a business crisis?
A lot of crises come from what I call smoldering issues in organizations. And a smoldering issue might be you've had a lot of customer complaints and you haven't connected the dots between the customer complaints. Keep an eye on your customer complaints. Toyota knew they had a problem, but they wouldn't admit to their problem and the recalls kept happening.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It could be that suddenly your noisy employee has gone very quiet.
Why is that a problem?
Well, in fact, they may have taken their story out into the social media and the disgruntled employee is bad-mouthing the company online. Mm. Or worse still, have gone out and bought a gun and is going to come into the workplace. It happened in California just last week.
Mm-hmm. Right.
75% of crises can be avoided. So look for the warning signs in your organizations and take action early.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Jane, what is a crisis communication plan? Is that something only large companies need?
All companies need a crisis communication plan, even if you're just a small one-person company.
Why is that?
Let's say you have contractors, for example.
Right.
You rely on your contractors for the supply of your business. So if something happens to one of them and you can't deliver your product, it's going to be a crisis for you. So organizations need a plan.
Right. So what do you mean by a crisis communication plan?
Your six best friends in a crisis are the five W's and how. What, where, when, why, who, and how.
Hmm.
You can write a plan based on what has happened. Who needs to know? When do they need to know? What do they need to know? Why did this happen? And how did it happen?
Mm-hmm. Got it.
Even if you just put that on one piece of paper, you're going to be better than not having a plan at all. Who gets the first phone call? How do we communicate? Do we put something out on Twitter when something first happens? It could be something that simply says, yes, we're aware that something's happened and we're looking into it. And when we know, we'll let you know.
How long does it take to put this plan together?
You can put a good basic plan together in a day if you really put your mind to it.
And how do you do that?
You get your employees together, take a good cross-section of, let's say, 10% of your organization, put them together in a room and thresh out what are the worst things that could ever happen to us, the most bizarre things that could ever happen to us. So a good basic plan can be put together in about 10 hours.
What skills would somebody need to effect a crisis communication plan?
I like to take the advice of Professor Ian Mutroff. To have an effective plan, you need to be able to think like a sociopath and act like a saint.
Uh-huh, sure.
In other words, think of the most bizarre things that could ever happen to your organization. The mere fact that you can think about something weird and bizarre means it could happen.
Mm-hmm. For instance?
In New York.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed, somebody had thought about a commuter plane flying into the World Trade Center, but they never went to the ultimate, most bizarre, rational, crazy thing that could happen,
yeah,
the terrorist attack. That's an extreme example, but nonetheless makes the point that if you think like a sociopath, you'll probably uncover all those things that could bring a company undone. And then when you're in a crisis, you act like a saint. You are compassionate. You are indeed very courageous. You demonstrate your competency. And you put yourself in the shoes of the victims, your key audiences. How are they thinking? How are they feeling? What is their panic? What would they need to hear from us? What do they want us to do? And if you put yourself in the shoes of your key constituents, your key stakeholders, you'll probably not only survive, but ultimately thrive through a crisis.
Hmm.
Right.
So empathy is key.
Of course.
But also a very level head. And for a leader in a crisis, courage is important. Compassion is important. Common sense is important. Competence is important. A good leader comes to the fore in a crisis.
Exactly.
It's a make it or break it moment for leaders. So you can think of Rudy Giuliani back at 9/11. It was a making moment. On the other hand, George Bush had a breaking moment at Katrina. So you need to choose your spokespeople wisely in a crisis. Being able to handle extreme pressure is obviously important.
Mm-hmm. Does managing a crisis online differ from dealing with it on the traditional communications media?
Online, it's really important to jump on something very fast because it can go around the world in nanoseconds. So there might be some misinformation about your product or your CEO. It could be misinformation about the industry. And unless you correct that, that information is going to be out there for the world to see. So my advice is that you jump online and correct it. Now, if it starts to get to be a bit of a catfight online, a lot of negative comments going back and forth, do whatever you can to get that conversation offline as fast as possible. Say, thank you very much for your interest and your comments. How can we talk to you about this?
That's very interesting. But I have the feeling it would be very hard to get people to stop talking about a crisis. Isn't that the case?
You'll never get people to stop talking about a crisis, but I think there's some lessons we can learn. Let's take an example of Red Cross. They're doing crisis management well these days, and particularly in social media.
Right.
Earlier this year, one of their employees tweeted about how he was going to get beer, and he tweeted it out on the official Red Cross tweet. Needless to say, that could have caused them great headache.
Oh, yes.
In blood donation circles. However, they humanized it very quickly and said, don't worry, Dave never works anywhere near the blood. We've taken him away from that. They made it a little bit humorous, so much so that the beer company that was mentioned made a donation to the Red Cross and partnered with them, and they were able to raise funds and get more of what they need into their blood banks. They turned what could have been quite nasty for them into a positive because they acted fast and recognized that social media in particular is about human emotions, the human drama and stories as much as it is about facts and figures.
Can you identify, say, three things that you can do to protect your reputation in a crisis?
Okay, the top thing is you must listen.
Right.
It's monitoring, understanding the emotions, understanding what the panic is. And if it's in any way your fault, the first thing you have to do is fess up, acknowledge the concern. So empathize and acknowledge. That's absolutely critical in a crisis. The other thing after that is what are the actions you're taking? If you are concerned about what's happened, the only way that I'll believe you're concerned is if you tell me what you're going to do about it. So be very specific. Tell me things you're doing. Are you flying in your best response team? Are you going to work around the clock? Are you going to open an investigation? Do you promise to give us the results? We will judge you on your response. And the third thing is update me. Keep me informed. People forget that in a crisis, people need to be told what to do. So the third element is a call to action. Do I need to evacuate my house now? Do I need to take that product off the shelf? Tell me what I need to do.
Well, of course, a major factor here is communication. Do you have one person or a number of individuals talking to the public?
The first thing to do operationally is to empower your front line. They are the key ambassadors for your organization, your brand, your industry, or professional association. In the first and early stages of a crisis, they can and should be authorized to speak.
Right.
They care just like you do, and they need a way to be able to express what they're doing to fix the problem as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so how do you make it happen?
Take the U.S. Coast Guard, for example.
Okay.
U.S. Coast Guard have empowered their front line. They train and give media awareness to all their front line. When an incident happens, the first place the media will go is to the pilot or the captain of the ship, someone who can give a first-hand account. But if it's a really serious crisis and lives have been lost, like in a BP situation or Fort Hood situation, the CEO has no choice but to be out there. Because when the CEO takes control, they say, I care and I'm accountable. But they also say, this is serious. And also, it's incredibly important to test and validate your spokespeople because human beings default to type in a crisis.
What does that mean?
If English is your second language, for example, you will forget how to speak English in a crisis. You want to make sure that your spokesperson speaks in the language that's most appropriate in that situation, which is most likely going to be English.
Mm-hmm.
So choose your spokespeople very wisely. The other thing is to default to type a character and personality. The most outstanding example we saw of this, which was unfortunately a bad example, was Tony Hayward, the hapless CEO of BP with the infamous, I want my life back. If the CEO fails at some level, where do you go after that? Very hard to find someone to come in over the top of the CEO.
That's true, unfortunately.
Yes.
Okay, now, Jane, just to wrap this up, do you have any concluding thoughts you want to leave our audience with?
Absolutely. I don't think we've ever been able to control the media, and I include social and traditional. But understanding deadlines and working with the media is critical in a crisis because they can help you get your story out. And if you need to evacuate a home or you need the community to stop eating a particular brand because it's been contaminated, you need the media on your side. But you need to understand how they work and who they are before the crisis happens. Make your friends before the crisis. Making friends in a crisis is almost impossible. So make your friends, find out who your allies are, know who the media are in your industry, social and traditional, before the crisis hits.
We've been talking to Jane Jordan Meyer, author of the book, The Four Stages of Highly Effective Crisis Management, How to Manage the Media in the Digital Age. Jane, thanks for being with us on Edgewise.
My pleasure. Good to be here.
Join the American Management Association group on LinkedIn to share insights with hundreds of your management peers and to discuss practices in the areas of organizational management and leadership. To find us, simply search for the group American Management Association from your LinkedIn account. We'd love to get your feedback on today's program. You can either email us at podcast@amanet.org or call 800-697-3406. Your comments may become part of a future program. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.